Welcome one and all to Last Stop Penn Station podcast featuring Carrie Silken and Ian Riccoboni. They dive deep into Carrie's wealth of stories, and no subject is off limits. From the world of wrestling to his ticket agency, growing up in New Jersey, drug-fueled underground days, hustling in the French Quarter of New Orleans, and endless days and nights in New York City, every story is worth telling.
Thank you so much for joining us for another exciting edition of Last Stop Penn Station. It's Ian Riccoboni, our guest of honor, Carrie Silken. Our producer, AJ, is here. And we just got off the phone again with Bushwhacker with Carrie.
There's so many stories.
We barely scratched the surface.
We didn't scratch the surface. We scratched the surface a little. But he's such a cool man.
It's amazing. You know, you think of him as a bushwhacker, but you don't realize his career starts in the 60s, all the way back in Australia. We talked about that last week. This week, we're going into Portland, talking about Roddy Piper, Don Owen, Don Leo Jonathan, some of these amazing names from the past.
Right, and we still haven't touched a thing. And the best thing about it is, even though you met him back when we did, Field of Honor?
Field of Honor 2015, right? Yeah.
Now you're really getting to know why I have such a, you know, he's a beautiful man.
He
really
is.
And, good guy.
And I looked it up, Carrie. He's had 8 matches in Ring of Honor. 7 of which were taped and aired. I'm thinking we asked Ring of Honor officials to make it the week of whacking. One day of Bushwhacker, one match of Bushwhacker Luke every day for a week. Be a week of whacking. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me. We got the July 11th Ring of Honor. The fans are going to be back in Baltimore.
First match announced, Jay Lethal, Brody King.
Whoa.
Yeah, first time.
Whoa.
Ever. Yeah, Jay Lethal goes back to the watch party. Jay Lethal not happy about being pinned at the hands of the Gonzo Bomb from Brody King.
And, of course, the 55-5 rolls on.
Yeah, got some Hall of Famers.
Poster of the week.
Ad-free show.
Watch party.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on.
Women's Division Wednesday.
Yeah, shout out to Bobby Cruz and Maria Kanellis, who are the scouts for that division, bringing in some great talent. We saw Trisha Dora, Alex Gracia. We're seeing a big debut this week. Willow, one of my favorites. Willow debut. She's awesome, Carrie. You got to see her.
Okay.
So, without any further ado, though, we don't want to waste any more time. We're going to take you to part 2 of our very special interview with Bushwhacker Luke. And if you like hearing about, well, I'm not even going to blow it. He tells it better than anybody. Let's take it to Bushwhacker Luke right now. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. It's Last Stop Penn Station. Ian Riccoboni, Carrie Silken. We're back again by popular demand with Bushwhacker Luke. Luke, we have a couple more questions to ask. We had so much fun last time, and you're back with us again.
Before you go to start mating, I'm looking for some bush to whack.
Some bush. Well, I'll tell you what, we're celebrating Pride Month in the month of June here in the U.S. We're having a lot of fun. We had some fun last week. And
Response we ever got for an episode.
Easily.
From the Larry Sweeney and our episodes about, you know, Ring of Honor making it to the Garden, we had the best response. And we're happy to have you back, Luke. We appreciate you taking
this. Well, let's hope this old bastard gets you more this time.
All right.
All right.
I know. These days you don't advertise the person beforehand because it's on a podcast. The people can come and listen to it anytime they like. So it's word of mouth.
That's right. And we got some words for you. A couple names came up last time. We talked about Andre the Giant. We talked about the Rougeau brothers at WrestleMania. He told some great stories about Little Beaver. But we had some fans write in. They wanted to know a little bit more about your time in Portland. Portland.
I wanted to know. I just wanted to know about your Little Beaver. How is it? They tell me you're a little bit of a Sheila.
Well, yeah, you know, the way it takes it.
That's Carrie's opinion of you anyhow.
It's not mine.
It's not mine.
He's a good guy. But Luke, you went to Portland after the doing Montreal, doing Calgary, probably bouncing back to New Zealand. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you hit New Zealand when Piper was there.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I did Portland.
Yeah, right. Kerry, today are you having brain farts?
Yes.
anyhow, what happened was we finished up in Calgary. We had 6 weeks to go, 6 weeks off between shows before we started in Portland, Oregon. So we went to Calgary for 6 weeks, and that's when I first met Dynamite Kid. I think we told that story last time. You know, when I first met Dynamite Kid. You know, when I left there, we were the smallest guys in the territory. And when I came back this time for those 6 weeks, Butch and me were the biggest guys. I think I told you that on the last podcast, didn't I?
We scratched the surface. Yeah, maybe let's talk about Calgary a little bit more.
They just give me the protein so I can build muscle.
There you go.
My wife's very good. My wife's always helping me out there.
Yeah. Well, why don't you speak with it about whatever you would like to? But I know you had some really fun time going to work.
Yes. Yeah.
With Don Owens in Portland.
Yeah, Don Owens in Portland. Yes, he was another piece of work, but. When I went to Calgary the last time too with Dynamite Kid, he was the king of the pranks, or the ribs, heavy ribs, and that was, he was wild.
What kind of
you heard about Dynamite's ribs are wild? You know what I mean? Dropping the calcium pills in people's drinks, shaving their heads. You know, he didn't give an F. He did a lot of stuff.
Wow. How did
that was only touching on the edge, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How did the other wrestlers react? How did you guys react if you were on the opposite end? Did it come out in the ring at all?
No, we were partners with them. For those six weeks I went back. Yeah. Hang on a minute. My four-legged daughter wants to get out of the room. Sorry.
No problem. It's
quite all right.
But four-legged daughter. Okay. Anyhow, mate. Anyhow, we came back there and Dynamite, they were wild. He was wild in that. You know, when I first went out in the arena, you know, I saw these guys in the dressing room when I came back. This is for that 6 weeks. And that when we left, we were the smallest guys in the territory. When I came back and looked around, they were all 160 to 200 pounds. Well, that's 70 to 200 pounds in that. Then I went out and looked at the arena, and I was sold out.
Wow.
That's when Dynamite was coming off the corner doing those, you know, Benoit coupled, the flying headbutts from one corner right across the ring to the other side.
Did you meet him in IWE in Japan with Rusher Kimura? Was he there at the same time? Or
No. Okay. I never met him in Japan.
Gotcha.
This was my first meeting with him. And Davey Boy didn't come in for a year or so later. So that was my first meeting with him. And we're on the loop with him for 6 weeks. And there was an old guy there from Wigan. Wigan is the shooter school. You've heard of Wigan?
I know his name. God, shit. go ahead.
John Foley. John Foley.
John Foley, right. He was an old shooter, and I read in Bret Hart's book, he was a drinker, right?
Heavy drinker. Cauliflower nose, cauliflower ears.
Wow. Bushwhacker Luke is...
his nose was like that. All the people from Wigan, if you looked at them, they're in the 30s. They looked like they were 60.
Right. So he was a real shooter. And I read some things, and I think you told me some things at the end of his career when he was a bit out of it between the alcohol and just these guys would do some nasty stuff to him.
They'd put his mattress, his bed in the bath, the floor of the bath up with water, with a mattress, and they would put the coat. He'd be down in the bar drinking, and then move all the machines in the hallway, the coat machines and all that, across the front of his door. So when he came out drunk, he couldn't get into his bedroom, you know, into his room in hotels and stuff like that. They pulled him and dyed his hair this bastard was an old salty bastard. 170, he was around 170. And, you know, we used to finish the last, the loop was, I think I mentioned to you before, Saskatoon was on a Wednesday. Tuesday was Red Deer. Monday was Lethbridge. Thursday was Regina. Not Virginia, Regina.
Okay.
Right. It wasn't Ian Rickakana. Wasn't Ian anyhow. It wasn't that Virgin. I'm going to get to you about that in a minute. Anyhow, that's coming up. Anyhow, we used to do Regina and that, and then we used to do that drive home for 550 miles back to Calgary. Yeah. 550 miles at Calgary. Friday, that was Thursday night. We were an hour behind, so we picked up an hour coming back, you know, going back to Calgary. But Saturday, Friday night was television in Calgary. So we get in the daybreak and have to sleep to get enough sleep to work. Anyhow, that trip back, the first stop was a breakfast stop. It was, I can't think of it now. A well-known plant. When you're coming out of Saskatchewan into Alberta. Anyhow, it was a truck. All the truck drivers were there. And the first stop was around 2 o'clock in the morning or 1:30 in the morning. And it was loaded with truck drivers, you know, driving that big stretch. It's Prairie. There's no big towns, just a stretch right to Calgary. And he used to be drunk by then. He used to get down on his hands and knees in this truck stop. It was, you know, a massive truck stop with showers and all that. And he used to call all these truck drivers, "Come on, you big fucker, see if you can take me." He used to call all these big fuckers out. You know, these truck drivers that sat there and drove all through the night all the time. You know, they, a lot of them are big bastards, right? You don't see any small guys like Kerry. They're all big guys, you know, 250. And a lot of them have got a belly, of course, because they, you know, they all they do is eat in the truck and fucking, and you know, drink, not alcohol, otherwise, because you, those days, this is, I'm talking about the, now we're in the 70s, right. and 1970s, and he used to be blind drunk on the floor and calling all these bastards out.
Damn.
Come on. And they looked at him and said, "Oh, you fucking old bastard, you sick old bastard." They felt sorry for him. Little did they know, if they touched him, they would be laying on the floor straight away. You know what I mean?
Did anybody?
This fucker. No, not while I was there. But this fucker, whether he was drunk or not, could just grab you by the wrist and have you begging. You know what I mean?
Right. Wow.
Just like Adrian Street. Everyone looked at that little cocksucker. And, you know, he's a gay gimmick, but he was anti-gay, right? And, that's a story I'm going to bring up. Adrian Street, and remember this before the show finishes, okay. Adrian Street in Texas.
Wow, okay.
And Odessa. Anyhow, you know, little Adrian, anyone to come up at him, he was from Wiggum too. Mm-hmm. But he had kept himself pretty. He hadn't been grilled, you know, grilled, what I mean, beat into place. If you came out of Wiggum, you had to look like a pro. So the first thing they did was fucking cauliflower your ears, roll them up and nail them so they swell up, yeah. That's where they had them. They all came out with them. They looked all fucked up. Anyhow, I get to we're all getting to Don Owens territory, Northwest Championship. And when we get there, there's a hell of a crew.
Who is that?
Adrian Adonis, Ron Starr, who exposed the business in the early 80s on 2020 or something or other. Ron Starr.
What about Piper?
Loosen up, Gary. Ron Starr. There was Cowboy Ron Bass, mm-hmm. Killer Brooks, Ronnie Piper. Then I got them to bring in Rick Martel. And Snooker just left. And a well-known guy in the business who became a great teacher. This was his first territory.
Rip Rogers?
Rip Rogers.
Yeah.
Rip, the first guy we met when we arrived there, and then he met us at the bomber. You know, he told us, all the boys stay at the bombers. It's a gas station. The guy who was in the Second World War was a pilot and flew a B-52. He bought the fucking plane. He put it up above the pumps. And they told me, when you drive along the Lachlan Boulevard, you won't miss the bomber. It's a plane sitting up above the gas pumps. And lo and behold, and then at the back, there's a big field and there's little cottages all around it.
Well, I got to bring up one name. I don't know if he was there, though. Was Jesse Ventura there?
No, but Jesse Ventura came in and out. I'm just going to tell you an overview first. We were there for 16 months, or 18 months, say 14 months of that was with Roddy Piper and Rick Martel. And these towns were run every five of these towns Monday. I'm just looking at the towns. Four or five of these towns were run every week. And we went back there and we were with the same guys. The first month, we took the belts off Stan Stasiak,
right,
and Dutch Mantel.
Or Dutch Savage.
Dutch Savage. And Dutch Savage was a big star there and was a semi-booker. And his mate was Stan Stasiak, who had beat Bruno.
Yes.
And he still carried the check around, the three-round check. This was 1979. He had it in his wallet, the stub.
Wow.
He was still proud of that, huh? That was a payday for 73.
Yeah.
Luke, go ahead.
Anyhow, you know, so we worked with them. And then over that period of time, we went from tags down to we did singles. I don't think we did any singles except hair matches. We did our tags and six mans. So that's where Andre came in. Jesse Ventura came in. A lot of guys, Jesse Ventura, a lot of guys from Minneapolis and guys from around the country. You know, they bring in people who have been there in the past. You know what I mean? As baby faces, but usually big names. And they would tag with Roddy and Rick Martel. And of course, we had our army. Buddy Rhodes, when we came in, this was his home, and he saw that it was a great thing and that to be partners with us. So he became an anti-American and he carried our New Zealand flag around and wore New Zealand gear.
Was that the first time anybody did that? Because I know you do it later with Johnny Ace and a couple other guys.
Yeah, he was the first American that we used with the flag. And of course, that gave him more longevity, a longer time in the territory. He was there for 10 years. And that, you know what I mean? And what a run. You know, what a run he had. But he had a hell of a... Buddy Rose, you saw him as a big fat fuck. But he had a brain like Piper for the business. He would video the tape, the matches, he'd get home about 4 in the morning after the Saturday night. Then he would start looking at the match and see where he could fuck the fans for the following week. You know, him and Piper, this is what they did. Well, that's why we had 22 consecutive sellouts there. You know, I didn't know this till just before Roddy died. He told me we had 22 consecutive sellouts.
Wow.
So anyhow, getting through. So the North End was run by Don Owens.
He was the owner.
Mm-hmm.
The owner. But his brother was his partner too. Now they both had a ranch. They lived on a ranch, a turkey ranch and Elton's home was only 100 yards away from Don's, but he didn't know what the fuck was going on. He was a drunk. You know what I mean? He was a drunk. And every Monday night, we do Salem. Now, Salem was an old theater. When you walk down under the stage and you get changed under the stage and you come up at the back of the stage. And so it was a theater. We only had seating out the front. You know, the announcer or that would have a chair on the side, everything at the back. And Elton had been working there since the 50s. You know what I mean? He was, you know, the family had this territory for years. Elton was a drunk. I'd say he was in the 60s or 70 by now, 60s, late 60s.
So look, Don Owens kept the good towns, and then he gave his drunken brother a couple of the smaller towns.
No, the brother had all of the south of Portland. It was up for the brother to get them going or not. You know, but he didn't know what was fucking going on. So the Dutch tried to help him. And anyhow, Elton was Elton. You know, he'd done a bit of boxing. He had a bit of a pug nose. He had a toupee, a weave and that. And he used to drink. And we didn't know whether it was vodka or gin. It was always clear whether he had 7-Up in it or not. And he always stood at the door, you know, at the end of the night. So when all the fans come out and say, had him on the shoulder, good night at wrestling, good night. And if he into it, away with the breezes, if he nodding. But if anyone said to him, fuck, they're getting the sheep herders have got one of the guys handcuffed and they're beating out the other one, he would rush to the ring, stumble into the ring, pull himself up, and he'd come in with the mic and he says, quiet, everybody, quiet. Because we'd be doing something, you know, the arena would still be full because we'd be doing an angle for the following week, you know what I mean? And he would say, quiet, everyone, I'm sheep herders, I'm finding you $10,000 tonight. $10,000. He'd say some stupid figure. You know, and it wasn't, you know, there was only $4,000 in the house or $5,000. Anyhow, he would say this to that, and all the people would be happy, and it would take the heat off the angle. You understand? You understand? So this night, look, I thought I told the story to you last week. I've been doing so many podcasts. My daughter's been giving me books at a high price for 30 minutes and 40 minutes. Here I am doing a fucking here. And I'm doing a fucking freebie here. Anyhow. But this time Elton came in the ring and blah, blah, blah. And Butch says, Butch went and he said, grab the old bastard. And I grabbed him like this, and Butch grabbed the belt. This had been going on for 6 months or 8 months.
Yeah, what if he knocked off his wig?
This is it. Hang on, I'm getting to it. Butch grabs the belt. Butch runs with him with the belt, whacks him over the head. He goes, I let him go. He goes down. His glasses go out of the ring onto the floor. His wig twists around to the side. And he's bald here. And he's down. We leave the ring. The guys uncuff one of the baby faces. I think we had one of them to whatever. And we're beating them up. And we leave the ring. Now we're in the locker room. And we were the last match. And then you go to the ticket box to get paid off. Elton pays every night. He has a sheet of paper like this, and he has everyone's name from the main events right down. And, you know, those days, the company, the door was split three ways. A third for the promoter, a third for the overhead, that's for the building, advertising, and all the rest of the bullshit, and the third for the boys. And he would have the tents, the 20 stack, the 10 stack, and the fives. And he would, when you come in there, he would put a 5 over, a 20 over, 25, and then he'd put another 20, a 20, and then he'd put a 5 or a 10. Then he'd pull back the 10, put a 5, then he'd look back at it, and then pull back the 20, and then change it all. Oh, you used to watch him. You wouldn't know till the final how much you're going to make. You know, the main events. And then he'd look at you. You were good tonight. Good attitude. Give you $5 for a good attitude. Buy a six pack, but don't tell the boys. Now if you hit the post, and he said, good juice tonight. And he says, how'd you get it? You say, hard way, old. Oh, shh, don't tell the boys. Here's an extra 10. Or 20. You tell them the hard way. Anyhow. Get it. So this night, we're all waiting now. No one wants to go in to get paid. There's baby faces. I don't know what they've got. They've got paper in the heel room. We're all sitting there. There's Buddy Rose, Rip Rogers, one of the guy who was a Fargo for a while, just took big bumps. Great worker.
Mon Fargo?
Gay guy, hell of a worker. He worked for Joe Cocker, you know, as a bodyguard for Joe Cocker.
Oh,
you know that.
Is you talking Adrian?
Chris.
Oh, Chris Colt.
Chris Colt.
Chris Colt. Chris Colt could get heat begging, selling.
Yeah.
You know, he was a master, just begging like Rick Rude. People, you know, Rick Rude used to beg and sell and take those bumps. Now he must have copied this guy because he was a master of it. You know what I mean? And people wanted to get in the ring when he was selling and beat him up. So we're sitting back there. We're sitting back in the dressing room. Anyhow, in the end, Butch says, fuck it, I'm going. So Butch goes to go into the room there. And before Elton could say a word, he says, what a job, Elton. What a job you did. But next time, listen to this. Luke's going to grab you from behind. I'm going to grab the belt. But when I run in, Luke's going to push you out of the way like you ducked. And I'm going to hit Luke. He's going to go down and do the selling. And Elton says, what a great idea, Butch. What a great idea. And he paid him off, and he gave him an extra 20 for the idea for next time.
That's great. Didn't he?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Now we're getting to the little place. Now, that was in Eugene, a Wednesday night, getting back to Salem, the little theater. He'd been there for 30 years. And then he'd knock on the door and had to come downstairs. The boys used to lock the door as he come down the steps. And he used to bang and bang and bang. Open up, open up. Fuck, I've been knocking on this door for 30 years. Let me in. And then a new guy in the territory, no one would go except the new guy would feel embarrassed and go over the door with him. Anyhow, there's a place in Oregon called Pendleton. Pendleton makes gabardine cloth. You know, gabardine is a good quality cloth for suits.
Right.
Jackets, coats, everything.
My father and your grandfather would have and AJ too, have a gabardine suit. It was like a prestigious.
And really expensive.
Right.
And Elton used to get his sports jackets here. Cheers, guys. Hang on.
I'll raise my soda to you as well.
So what? He used to like to
go. So then, what's that, mate?
He used to like to be well-dressed.
Well, he always used to wear slacks and a sports coat. He'd have his Monday sports coat, his Tuesday sports coat, his Wednesday. These are his towns.
Gotta look sharp.
He'd have different sports coats for each one. And then, the checkered one was always the Monday night one. Anyhow, he used to come down, and he'd be half cut by the middle of the night, and the boys used to have blades. You know, the razor blade. And as he went past with his jacket, They'd go like that on the back of his jacket. Go to the back of that and go back of his jacket. And then, you know, for a couple of weeks, he'd be wearing the same sports jacket and they'd be doing that. But the third week, he wouldn't be wearing it. And the boys would say, Elvin, where's your chicken? Where's your Monday night sports coat? And he says, but they don't make them like they used to. They all fall apart on me. He says, I don't know what's wrong with them. They all, the back of them all fall out.
That's why I put everybody over so no one messes with my suits. As the announcer, you have to put everybody over.
Oh, well, I told you last week about the Vachons, didn't I?
Yeah.
With his leg cut off. Anyhow, and they were expensive suits. Anyhow, this is the next one, Father Belton's. Okay? Here's another one. He used to smoke big stoogies, right? You know, the best, and the best, too. The old bastard used to go to a gentleman's club and hang out there. And on Saturday night was always the TV night where we did the titles changes and that. That was the main building. Elden, Don owned the building. He bought a big supermarket and cleaned everything out. And that, and had bleachers made on wheels. So he would do bookings and that, and depending how much ringside bookings, that was how many chairs went out. And all the bleachers were big bleachers, and the ringside would be all pre-booked. He'd save about one row around the back, and then he'd bring the bleachers in. You understand?
Yeah.
So it always looked packed.
Right.
It always looked packed.
Yeah.
It always looked packed. And anyhow, we used to have 10 rows. When we were selling out, we used to have 10 rows of chairs.
Wow.
10 rows right around the rings. And then the bleachers on the back. And these were high bleachers. The last part up the top, you'd be standing on the second to last part. Your head would be nearly against the ceiling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyhow. Where was it? Yeah. Oh. So anyhow, that was Saturday night. He wouldn't know who got the bells. He would wait to Monday or Tuesday, and we go, I got a title match on tonight. Who's got the bells? He lives 100 yards away from his brother. He doesn't know who the champions are or nothing. Anyhow, he always used to be sucking on a big stoogie, a big fat cigar. And when he went upstairs, he would leave it. This was in Salem. He would always leave it, the end hanging over the table. In the bar, there was about three little rooms off a big room underneath the basement. The big room was only maybe 20 feet by 15 feet. There was chairs around the walls. And then there was two or three little rooms. He had one room as his office. And outside that office was a little a desk sort of thing, a little table about that wide, and he had a shooter trophy on that. I'll get to that in a minute. He'd leave his big cigar on that table, hanging over the end, and he'd go upstairs. As soon as he'd go upstairs, Killer or Piper grab that cigar, pull down their pants, jam it up their ass, turn it around a few times, and put it back there.
Wow.
He would come down to the office. We wouldn't do it every week. They'd do it about once every 6 weeks.
Okay.
You know, 5 weeks. He'd come down, grab a cigar, and be talking to the boys, and go to pick it up, and then he wouldn't even get it, and he would go back, and someone would talk to him again, so he never got into his mouth. You know, we used to control him. Like that, you know, did you see that match on? And he'd say, yeah. And he'd go over there, what do you think of the finish? If you bring it up, what do you think of the finish? You know, anyhow, when he was going up to see the match again, he was going to have a fucking toke. And he'd say, who's shit over here? Who's shit over here? This room smells like shit. He's holding the shit in his hand.
Oh.
And when he put it to his mouth, all the boys we'd crack up, we'd be fucking turning around and pretending we're telling jokes to each other.
You mentioned something about the shooter's trophy.
Okay. You know, I told you he was an ex-boxer.
Right.
And the first, as soon as he got a new guy in the territory, he would look at them, and there's a thick set in that, and like Butch was a, Butch before his WWE run, Butch right back in the 80s and 70s, he could sit, he could like that sideways, and you could sit a beer on his chest. That's the sort of, you know, he had that deep rib cage and that, and he had the big pecs on it. He trimmed right down from 245 to about 220, you know what I mean? When he was in WWE, 225. Anyhow, so when we came in there, he looked at me, and then he looked at Butch, and he says, Butch, can you, you're a stonky-looking son of a bitch. Can you go a bit? Can you shoot? And Butch said straight away, fuck Elton, I started going out with my dad shooting when I was 7 or 8 years of age.
I was brought up shooting.
yeah, shooting. You know, his dad was an Irishman. They used to go out hunting. His dad took Butch out when he was 8 years old, you know, hunting wild pig and deer, and that Butch and that. So then later on, when the fight was off, he called me in the office and he says, your partner's got a bad attitude. This is when we first got there. Bad attitude. I said, why? Well, I asked him if he could shoot. And I said, what he told you? He went out with his dad. He says, hey, we're in a man's game. I'm talking about shooting wrestling. Shooting if you wrestle. Anyhow, he had this trophy. And he had a champion. The shooter's trophy was for, this is how Elton would pick two guys out, especially if they had good amateur backgrounds, because he would find out. They said, I was from some college. I went to some, and then he'd know about the college and, you know, if they were a good wrestling team, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Amateur wrestling team. He had the shooter's trophy. And then he would pick out two guys, you know, and he'd get them to do a 2-minute shoot. Now, the 2-minute shoot, he thought the referee, he always thought the referees were a shoot. He didn't know that they were working with the boys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he would send the two guys out. When you went out, he said, tonight, he paid 20 for a win, 10 for a loss. You know, and if he thought it was a draw, he'd pay 15 each. And it was a 2-minute shoot. He would go out and kneel on the floor or lean on the bottom apron and have his head under the bottom row, watching. The boys used to come out and log off amateur style. You know how you hook behind the head,
right,
and hook the arm? And then after, when the 2 minutes are up, the referee would say, 2 minutes up, you tap on the shoulders, then they'd go back and lock up professional style. Can you believe that? Can you? Now, listen, when me and Butch saw this, he said, this is a fucking joke. You know what I mean? But to Elton, this was big time. Elton used to run back to the dressing room after it was over. What did you think? I think Bill had points on Jim, and as soon as he said Bill had points on Jim, we would all go for Jim. Jim, you know, we would, and he would argue with us, and argue us, and we'd say to him, well, you have to bring him back again. So they'd get paid 10 and 20 and 10 for the first match, which they'd split anyhow. They'd take 15 each, right? He thought the referee was a shoot too. You know what I mean? And that, the referee was in on it. And then the second time around, he went up it to 30-20. So now there's a $50, and they're getting 25 each. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he would work it. He could work it in that. And if we thought, if the boys thought that these two could get a third one, you know, we'd agree with them in the end. Yeah, the other guys got it because it was a shit show. So we'd just agree with them and that, and the second one. But if we thought they had a great match, Then we would, you know, one of us would go with Eldon and the other two guys would go with Bug. Two or three would go against Eldon. And it was over there. There'll be an argument down there. And the only way to settle an argument was to bring it back for the third time. So the stakes now were 70, 40 and 30. And this was on top of your wage.
Right. So everybody's just splitting the money.
Yeah. But this was the first or second match. So those guys, you know, they were getting the low match on the totem pole, but it was a shoot. And it worked. It now he had a shooter's trophy, and Johnny England was another British guy from Wigan. He came over. Johnny came over here with a guy who was a Pensacola.
Ron Fuller.
With Foley. Not with Foley. No, with a guy Fuller. From Pensacola. Huh?
Ron Fuller.
No, the shooter, an English guy in Pensacola.
Oh.
We've talked about him before. And his son worked too for WWE.
Yeah, it was
Malenko.
English guy, mate. English guy.
Oh, Lord Alfred Hayes?
No.
Les Thatcher?
No. All track. I'll find it later, anyhow.
That's right.
Charleston. This guy was a real good shooter. Tie up in knots.
Tony Charles.
And his son worked. Good on you, mate. Hey, you've cleared the cobwebs away, mate. I told you, stop smoking that weed. Anyhow, Tony Charles, the son, he was in WWE for a while too. Under another name, he had concussion.
Well, Luke, if it's okay.
And getting back to the shooter's trophy. Johnny, this other guy, Johnny used to look after it and that, and he'd broken it into pieces and then glued it together with crazy glue. Crazy glue. But just little taps of crazy glue. And guys, you know, he'd have a big match. Like, we pulled up this for the third time around, and this was for the trophy. You know what I mean? And they'd come back. Now, they're coming back, and Eldon would go over to pick the trophy up to give it to them. But Johnny would knock the table, and the trophy would fall to the ground and go to pieces. Tears would come in Eldon's eye.
Poor guy.
Tears would come because that was his student's trophy.
Oh, man.
This guy, his first wife, her name was Hallie. And that he says, and that she was okay. Because the second wife, I'm going to tell you some about her in a minute. The first wife, Hallie, she would go to the shows with him, but she kept him more in contact. He'd be drinking with her, but she wasn't fucking a drunk. She wasn't a drunk like him. She more or less kept the head on the shoulders and that. By the way, Eldon is the only guy that shot himself in those balls. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to that in a minute. Anyhow, he used to say, I don't know what's up with that Hallie. She's got big tits. He's talking about his wife. She's got big tits, but the hair on her pussy's not like this, not the same color as the hair on her head. I don't understand that. He didn't understand because she'd go get her hair done. Right. You know how they get the silver hair, you know, when they get older and that. But the hair downstairs was different than upstairs. And he said, but he'd tell the boys, but the hair on her pussy, it's not like the same color. It's the hair on her head.
Not a very bright guy, huh?
Okay, not real. Anyhow, he come out of the show this night. You know, and he carries two canisters, a 7-Up, a Coca-Cola, and he not 7-Up, Sprite. He carries two canisters in his car. He's got a station wagon for the shows, and all he carries with him is a popcorn machine and two canisters and a can of gas and a big tube of gas. because he'd get there, he'd put his two canisters in, hook it up to the water, you know, the water main, and that he served Coke and 7-Up, you know, and popcorn. So he was making a lot of money out of that.
All profit.
Yeah.
All that is all profit. There's no fucking no overhead to one person. His wife running it. You know, in half time before you have a kid and that. But anyhow, this night he's out taking the canisters back out to the car. He's got the money in one pocket or carrying that. And he's got the gun in his pocket and he fucking actually knocked the fucking gun and that and went off. And the bullet, you know how the pocket ends down here? It shot through the bottom of one of his balls.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a true fact.
Oh, wow. Man. At least he survived, right?
He survived, yeah. But there's that, you know, hey, just say, you know he's crazy old fuck when you just hear that. Okay, how he dies. And he meets this new broad at the club. You know, the club I told you about, the businessman's club. Mm-hmm. And then he's always drunk there. But she knew he had money, right?
Hold on, I got to stop you. So the wife, his first wife, or this Hallie, who we're just talking about,
Yeah. She
passes away. And within days, he's right back out of the gentleman's club.
Yeah, you know, he met the other woman there before.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Oh, we have to. All right.
He must have. Because now he's got this new, I can't remember her name. But she was a drunk, too. She was a drunk, too. But she hooked on to him. You know, she was a drunk, not at the start of the night, but at the end of the night. She hooked on to him because she knew he had money. You know what I mean? Well, they had a turkey ranch. You know, selling turkey, that's not cheap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big ranch. And they had cows in that too, or cattle.
Yeah.
The turkeys was the big sellers. Anyhow, he's married to her. And then she's a bit crazy. Now, here's the first story. This night, we've got so much heat. Piper, one thing we did too, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to jump off Eldon and go to Don for a minute.
Okay.
Don's away on holiday. Don's the other brother, the same one. Flaky face. He's away on holiday and we are having this match with Piper and Martel in the end. We handcuff one, and we beat the other one up, and we put the fucking flag over their body.
Ooh.
We do America. We put the American flag over the body, and we stand above it. At the end of the TV goes off, us holding the news flag, Buddy Rose holding it, and our foot was a pipe on Martel. Martel was a Canadian, but right. They all took him as American, just like. Just like they cheered us, you know, USA when we were in the UK. Anyhow, they cheered USA for us. Anyhow, we're doing the flag thing. The Don's went holiday. He comes back and he's fucking mad. He says, "You fuck me. They've moved my TV. See." The TV was running 5 minutes behind actual broadcast.
Oh.
Live. We started at 8:30. The TV started at 8:35.
Okay.
Live. Till 10:30. Right?
Yeah.
You know what they did? They put it off now till 11 o'clock at night.
Oh.
They started the TV. And 11 to 1, or 10:30 to 1.
Okay.
He was pissed off like that. Came back, he says, "You fuck me, blah, blah, blah. Fuck it." Next week, it's advertised. The second week, ever, you don't advertise the TVs at this time. The pre-sales have jumped.
Wow.
You know why? Because people are coming to the show, getting front row seats and buying out because they can go home and watch themselves on TV.
Oh, wow.
That shows you how much of a mark the fans are. This was 79-80, but his pre-sales jumped way up.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I had to get that story in there because of that. You know, it just shows you how he said, fucked it, and then 2 weeks later, the pre-sales, he said, fuck, I don't understand. He said, well, he did. Why is pre-sales are up? Because people wanted to see themselves and they wanted the front row, that front row, second row. They called straight away. We're buying at the show, the end of the show. They're buying tickets for the next show. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Well, crazy. Yeah.
Some wild stuff about Portland.
We want. Yeah, anyhow. Going back to Alvin.
Okay.
And a second wife. So we've got this angle going there, and we're beating up. I think it again. We've got one handcuffed or tied up, and we're beating on another one. Fucking drinks are fucking coming in, thrown from everywhere. You know, cups. The fucking second wife is halfway to the rails. You know what I mean? She's way up. She comes to the ring with a mop and a bucket, hops in the ring while the match is on, and is going around the ring, mopping the fucking floor. I had to grab Roddy or Ricky and that and pull him over to the fucking corner and put a hold on him instead of beating him while she went around the ring. The other guy's leaning in the corner fucking laughing, and she's sweating. And then stuff is still coming in the ring, and she's screaming at the fans, stop it, and she's muffing the fucking ring. Cups are coming and flying, and then Eldon comes out ringside. Can't you see he's standing there fucking half under the wood? Can't you see my wife's in the ring fucking mopping it up so you people can watch the matches? Now, to see this, you got to vision it. This fucking old hag mopping the fucking ring. She looks like a fucking, you know, because she's half to the weather, more than half to the weather. And Elton's there sweating. The sweat is just popping off his forehead. You know, this is the end of the night. And it's out of control. You know, we've got the people how we want them to come back the following week.
And you're in there. Bag.
Yeah, and then she's popping the fucking ring up. Fucking unreal.
Well, I got a couple of names I wanted to bring up before we let you go. The one of the big ones for me, Don Leo Jonathan came in. Do you remember?
Hey. This is my list. We've only just started.
We'll bring you back again.
Jonathan.
Yes.
Jonathan.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah.
God bless him. You know, before you go on, Ian, I saw one of the greatest matches in Montreal Forum. And they went, you know, the Montreal, Central Montreal was run by the commission. You know, you get out 10 miles out of the downtown, the middle, or 8 miles, you're out of the jurisdiction. But in the jurisdiction, the commission runs it. And there's a 12 o'clock curfew. Okay. And that's what they did. Andre and Don Leo went to the curfew and they had to stop the match. They got a return out of it. Now, Andre at that time could drop kick, and he was saying, for 384 with a big afro. Mm-hmm. Fucking Don Leo could bloody do kip-ups.
Wow.
For 350 or 345. He was about 6'9". What was Don Leo?
But Luke.
6'10".
Don Leo Jonathan in the early 70s, he was sort of at the end of his career, but he was still a great athlete.
Well, I saw him. I'm talking about 1971, mate, 72. Okay. And I saw him do Kip Up Sen.
Wow. Yeah. And you wrestled in his retirement match in Portland, right? With Andre and Piper. And he came through Portland at the end, I think, right?
Yeah, I can't remember that, mate. Yeah. But I wrestled Don Leo. He was partners with that family that ran out up in New Brunswick.
The Duprees.
Duprees. He was a partner's 10% or 20%, and that was a seasonal territory. He lived over in Vancouver, but the summer he came there. And I came up from Montreal. Butch and me came up, and we were led to the Duprees for 2 weeks. We came up twice. One time, for 2 weeks, we worked with Mad Dog and Emil. And the next time we came up and we worked with Don Leo and Emil. And we're on PEI, Prince Edward Island. There was no bridge over there then. There was a ferry. And the ring, the referee took his new brand new car over on the ferry and drove us to the arena. It was a new Thunderbird, brand new. This was 73, I'd say. All leather interior, sunroof, everything. It was the cat's whiskers. That's the old saying, the cat's whiskers. You ever heard that one?
Yes.
The cat's whiskers.
The cat's, anyhow, Mom used to say the cat's meow.
Yeah, that's Venus. Right? And that, so we worked that night against Don Leo and Emil, and we the finish was I'd come in, he got Butch or me come in, and he had us in a submission hole, one of us, and the other one came in with a 4x2 and whacked him across the back. Well, that's when the hell broke loose.
Really?
You know, all PEI, Prince Edward Island, that's potato land. They're all the farmers' potatoes. Bottles started coming.
Luke, I was picturing Prince Edward Island, a very nice suburban crowd.
Fucking, these were wild fucking rednecks, mate. Wild rednecks. Bottles were hitting the ring post. Glass shattered.
Wow.
The glass was going everywhere. If they didn't get in the ring, they hit the ring post.
Jesus.
In the end, they had to fight us back. We had to let one of them go, and then we stayed in the ring and let one of them go. Oh, shit. Hang on a minute. I'm getting requests. Let one of them go, and we had to let Big Don Leo get up and fight us back to the even though we beat them, I think, or DQ'd, we let them fight us back to the fucking dressing room. Right? They cleaned out the arena and they got the police to take us out to the car, the referee's car. The fans saw us arrive in that car, right?
Yeah.
They smashed the roof through the glass roof on that car. Got in there and slashed all the leather seats.
Oh, no.
This referee cried. He'd only had it about 2 months.
Oh. How many times do you think you guys started riots like that? How many? Dozens? Hundreds?
Puerto Rico, especially in Latin countries, mate, too.
Yeah.
You know, but those days, it was wild. You know what I mean? You had to hold back. And on Indian reservations, we've had a few close calls too, because we worked against Indians. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
On Indian reservations.
Yeah.
Can we talk before we let you go? Can we talk for a little bit about when you wrestled with Bill Watts in Mid South, and you were doing you and Butch were doing the, I don't know if I got the numbers right, Ian, but I think the sheep herders did like 35 barbed wire matches,
right,
in 31 days.
Against the Fantastics?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's double headers.
Yeah, double headers. You know, but, No, I think it was, we were doing double headers, mate, but they couldn't get the ring to the second one. You know, the cage, because they only built one barbed wire cage. It's made of wood. You can see it on YouTube. You know what I mean? The cage they built. Wow. Have you ever seen the cage?
Yes.
It's on a lot of things. Yeah, it's made out of wood. It's bolted on the corners. But they put a wooden post between the ropes too. But from one corner to the other, where the barbed wire was, they put a post and they stapled the barbed wire to that to make it sort of more solid. Ooh. Anyhow, our heads were like cabbages. You know when you shred cabbage. Mm-hmm. You know when you shred cabbage for coleslaw, you start shredding cabbage. Well, that's how our heads were. Oh. We had to wash out every time, and then I think we got a little staph at the time, a little infection and that too at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
It was every night. It was every night, mate. That's when I wore. That's when me and Butch walked, and it was JR rang us up. Grizzly rang us up first, and they offered us $500 a night before we go to the ring, when we get to the building. So we knew when they offered us $500 a night, we were lucky to be making $2,000 a week. But we knew the Freebirds. See, I was supposed to be the booker. But I didn't want to take it because they wouldn't get rid of the intern booker, which was Slater.
Okay.
They said, you don't want him to stay. And he was a friend, an old friend from Florida Championship Wrestling. You never, when you bring in a new booker, you get rid of the old booker. Mm. You know why? Because they can be a bit of a conflict. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The new booker comes in and doesn't use me right. And that, well, I'm going to fuck him in the matches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I said, no, you know, they said, we're going to keep Dickie. And they waited and waited. So they brought in Ken Mantell from
World Class?
From World Class and that. And then he brought in the Freebirds, which is his team from there. And they were making more money than us, but we were the last match every night. Mm. We were gay. We were, you know, they were. We had heat.
Yeah.
You know, country. When you're over with a country, it's different with Americans working American angle. If you've got a hot angle going and you know how to keep the heat, and you knock American people, you know, like we knocked American people, told them that this was the, you know, the whatever state we're in, that was the latrine of America. It was the shithole of America. People, after being told that numerous times, and that it got to them, you know what I mean?
When you finally got the call from Vince to come to WWF, did you have any idea that they were going to change your whole gimmick? Because when I heard, you know, because I would get the Wrestling Observer.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I read, oh, shit, the sheep herders are coming to WWF. This is going to be awesome. And it was the Bushwhackers, which was still awesome.
Right.
But I wanted the blood and guts. How did they approach you on that?
I wanted that too.
Right.
I'm in Columbus, Ohio in Gold's Gym.
Okay.
Butch always does his drum at the end of the night. I don't do the drum. The drum is the core, Ian.
Right.
And then I'm on the phone picking up my messages. In Charlotte, there's voicemail from a guy called Pat.
Ah.
not you, not Patricia, darling.
Pat. Right, Pat Patterson.
And I call, I don't know it's him. Who the hell's Pat?
Right.
You know what I mean? He didn't say any other name, Pat. So I call it back. And he says, she heard her. I got someone to talk to you. And he had me on speakerphone. And all I heard was, g'day, Kiwi. That was Junior. Caesar. That was Caesar.
Right.
He said, I'd like to have you up here. Now, I've been sending tapes there. I went right back to sitting Betamax.
Wow.
Remember Betamax?
Yes.
That was the dad. That was the dad. And that, but they were all big men at the time. You know what I mean? Even when Roddy went there in 1981 and that, they didn't take him because he was too small. Right. He said, you can talk, but you're too small for a main event. Little did they know that he was the start of the WrestleMania. We go up there. He said, you come up. And I said, yeah, most interesting. He says, when can you come? And I says, you know, as soon as you like. And he says, when are you got a day off? And straight away I said, Wednesday. Whether I had it off or not, it was the day I could arrange. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wednesday. He says, when you get home, this was Saturday, when you get home on Monday, there'll be tickets on your doorstep.
Wow.
Whatever, they, you know, those days, it's you sent by, you know, overnight, what's it called? Federal Express or whatever. There's tickets there and on the doorstep. And that Wednesday, we hopped on the plane. We went up there, waited in the hall, got there, flew up first class. The limo waiting outside when we came down to get our bag. We didn't have a bag, maybe a shower kit. And that was a limo, a name of the limo there for us. And straight up to the office. Went in, we sat outside for a minute. Of course, he didn't bring us straight in, you know. He's got to teach us, you know, the waiting game.
Right.
We go in, and he says, boys, I would like to bring you in as the good guys. And I piped up and I said, I didn't realize you don't tell Caesar what to do. I piped up, and from being a booker for 10 years, you know, bring us in his heels and turn us baby faces. And then he says, I don't do things that way. And then Butch says to him, Butch got up on his hands and knees on his desk, and his beak is a bit longer than mine, but not as wide. And he's got his nose that far away from Vince, maybe 8 inches. And he says, if you can make these faces, babe, go ahead. And he says, look at the mugs on my good guys. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He said, they aren't the prettiest mugs, are they? Which is right. Look at those mugs.
Yeah.
Look at Duggan's. Look at Jake's. And that's Randy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Hulkster.
Yeah.
None of those have got pretty mugs. And he says, you know, which is go for it. So he said, I'm going to start bringing you up here every week to do videos, which are vignettes, you know, 2-minute movies, 3-minute movies. And that's why we'll run those. We'll do a whole day of, every week we'll do a whole day of vignettes. Because then he was on USA Network. He was on ABC, NBC. He was on about 4 different channels.
Yeah.
This was before the sex scandal. He lost 160 stations, network stations, when he had this, you know, 1992, that scandal, he lost all of those stations.
But he was right. So, I mean, it worked out. It worked out.
Hey, so we get home. We get home. 2 days later, there's a fucking package at our doorstep. Butch rings me up. I haven't seen it yet. Okay. He's living in an apartment about 6 apartments away from me with Julie, the second wife. And he says to me, oh, they've sent the wrong contracts. This is for the bushwhackers. And I say that, you know, I've been in an office. I've been doing all this shit for a while. I says, no, mate, he fucking wants to own us. He wants to own us. But then you only pay so much on merchandise. You know, if we use our name, he has to pay 5% or 4%, you know, on the net. Right. Other than that, you know what? We got paid 1%. When you own the name, we only got a 0.5% each.
Wow. And you guys did sell a lot of merch.
Yeah.
We got checks of 30,000, you know, 30,000.
Could you imagine what they were making, though?
Oh, my goodness.
That was 30,000 each. 60,000 was 1%.
Right. Oh, my God.
Right.
Wow. I had a couple of zeros. 6 million. Jeez.
But, you know, the Bushwhackers turned out to be so popular, you were on Regis. You were on, what was that?
Family Matters.
Family Matters.
Yeah, we were on Family Squares, the personality squares. And then we were on a lot of, at dinners, we did a lot of, he got us away from the wrestlers, fan, and got us to different things, sports dinners, and dinners with toy companies, you know, toy company conventions, you know, not the wrestling, away from wrestling. We did a lot of, for the first year, we did a lot of stuff like that. You know what I mean? And then and he put us over strong for 2 years. And then we started putting over. He gave us to all the green guys he brought in.
How cool was it?
Boy. And they were green, I'm telling you. The nasties. 350 pounds each. And they didn't know how to work. Brian will tell you today.
Luke, his Allentown homies.
I'm from Allentown.
I know. Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry still knows how to handle himself. He laid a guy 4 punches out, bing, 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 the other night.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah, the guy drove him nuts. He just turned around and told him to shut up. And the guy never shut up. You could bang, bang, bang.
Wow, that's Allentown. That's
you know, him and his brother, older brother, cleaned up Allentown. They were notorious for that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They were from White. Is it Whitehall or what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
White what?
Whitehall, yep.
Whitehall. Anyhow, yeah, those two, they couldn't work. They couldn't punch. They didn't know psychology. They'd been in territories, and they were just going in and fucking punch. You know, when I first got these wingers off Brian, if you didn't catch them as they're coming in, you were knocked out or you were seeing stars.
Wow.
When Jerry went on the bottom rope and went up to stop you, he had hard heel boots on. He had boots on with hard heels. Those heels were going in that deep into your body. These guys didn't know how to work. You know, timing, they just went out and psychology, you know, and we had about 3 teams like that.
Yeah, the Beverly Brothers too, right? Mike Enos and
Wayne. Yeah, Mike Enos could work a bit, but his partner, and I just spoke on the other day, a beautiful guy, strong as an ox. He looked like in the ring, he looked as skinny as a rake, 6'2". What was Mike Enos' partner's name?
Wayne Bloom.
Yeah. Wayne had weightlifting records. That skinny bitch had weightlifting records.
Weren't they?
I just told
you. Luke, weren't you guys against the Killer Bees too or no?
No, they're gone.
They were big.
But he came in.
And he'd already mentioned, Brian had already mentioned unions of Vince, and Vince had got rid of them.
How cool is it to have your first dolls in the, to see those on the store shelves? They're actually.
It was no biggie to us. You know, the stuff getting made, and we just went with the flow. We just said, make as much as you can. You know, they said, we're going to do a doll. And we would just say, good, good, good. We put them over. We weren't fucking marks. You know what I mean? We had baseball cards. We were the first people in NWA that they wanted to put music to. Can you believe that? Heels. They wanted to put music to us because in the studios, when we came out in the studios screaming "Whoa and Yay" as heels, we used "Whoa and Yay" as heels, and then swinging our arms, we didn't march. We just swung our arms up, "Whoa, Yay," and all the black people would get behind us, believe it or not, in the studios in Atlanta. They loved us. They loved to hate us. You know what I mean? But we entertained them.
That's awesome.
In the studios, and they were putting music, gonna put music together with us. And that's where we left.
Wow.
And we got called to Vince anyhow. So we started on the road. Now, when we started on the road for Vince, you know, what's it called now? What do they call them now? Producers. They weren't calling them agents. Each agent had a different idea. George Steele wanted one of us coming to the ring, coming out of the crowd upstairs with popcorn, the other guy coming from the back of the arena with a drink down the bottom floor. And then, you know, how can the people look over there and look here? You know what I mean? Psychology, you know what I mean? Same as, hey, your guys are the same too. When you do four ways, they're all over the place. They've got a baby face and a heel over here. They've got a baby face and a heel over here. They've got the baby face on top here, and they've got the heel on top there. They don't synchronize them. You know, that's the psychology of the game. But I still see it, you know what I mean? And the four ways and that, they don't, it's best, you know, I did a lot of four ways. Mm-hmm. And that, and I always got sure that we're on one, the four of us were on one side of the ring. The four of us were in the ring. The four of us were over by the door. You know what I mean? So the people could concentrate. And I made sure if Butch was down and I was up on the other guy, I'd come over and nail the other guy from behind and get Butch up on top. So we're both on top, you know, for the heat. Let them fight back a bit to cut them off. And then talk to each other. Okay, let's go. Let them both start coming back together. See, synchronizing all that is where you get the big, big pop. Not that fucking,
Well, it's sort of a lost art. We're trying to keep it alive in Ring of Honor to the best we can.
Now, mate, you know, tonight, you guys have really pissed me off. Because I could be watching real wrestling.
Yeah.
Tuesday night. On USA Network.
Oh.
Real wrestling.
Half those guys started with us. They all came from Ring of Honor.
What do you mean? those guys there should leave there to come to show you guys how to work.
We love all of them. Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole.
They're all
Bobby
good.
Bobby Fish.
They tell me you're a bit like that, Ian. Your love goes a bit too far in two different directions, in a lot of directions.
Hey, yeah.
Now I hear that you used to be a sex educator.
This is correct. Yeah, award winning. Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you used to carry a kid around with you.
I did. That's
now.
Right.
Yeah. You know that kid. To be a good sex educator, you've used all those things in that kit. Now tell us about when you use them. and who you use them on.
Hey,
who
you use them on. Episode of Last Stop Penn Station. No, I'll tell you what. I had, we talked about the Halliburton last week. I was coming up a subway station, 8th Street and Broadway, and all of a sudden I felt the briefcase start to rattle. Little did I know, one of the vibrators had turned itself on. And as I was going up the stairs,
just like Frenchie Martin.
Just like Frenchie Martin. And I couldn't, you can't stop. So I just had to
walk.
Did
you put that briefcase right across the front of yourself?
That wouldn't have been the strangest thing I saw in New York.
You thrill seeker.
Well, Luke, we thank you so much for doing this with us. And we have so much more to go.
Yeah.
But we're out of time here tonight.
Yeah.
If you'd like to come back another time, we would love it.
I will, yeah. Come off and we'll close it. We'll wait a while. We'll wait a while. And see how this one goes, mate. And then all you folks on watching Last Stop Penn Station, I love being with you. And don't forget, go to Bushwhackerloop.com, and you can get one of these t-shirts. Whoa and a yay. And a new one's coming out.
There you go.
Nice.
And we'll push it.
Whacker down under. Bushwhacker down under.
Love it.
Luke, thanks again. We love you, man.
I love you guys too. Appreciate being on it.
All right.
You guys have a good night.
You too.
Make sure you keep that guy.
Give us. Oh.
have you got a charity? Have you got a chastity belt on him, mate?
Him? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Yeah, this is Bush like a Luke saying, I'm out.
Yay. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Luke.
For listening to Last Stop Penn Station podcast. Rate, review, like, subscribe, and share on your favorite platform. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or at laststoppennstation.com.